welcome to episode 4 of the Final Boss Blues RPG Maker podcast. I am your regular host, Despain, and I am here with my good friends,
Raynard Frost
and Keelum.
And let's start things off with a play or flay.
Yeah. Sounds like we're going to have a lot of fun with this one, as whether or not is a play or a flay seems to be very ambiguous from the cursory look I've done. The game we're going to cover today is Deceit, the Vian Chronicles. I hope I pronounced that correctly. I apologize if I didn't. This is by Gonor from the far-off land of Germany, or at least that's his native language. And let's get this started with the way we usually do, where I read the story intro.
The Republic of Eshteri is in disarray. For more than 2 years, a group of revolutionists, calling themselves the Resistance Movement, have fought against the Republic Guard in their endeavor to overthrow the High Council and its elected Chancellor, Gorwin. They are attacking military facilities as well as those supplying the Republic troops with food and clothing. They do not threaten the lives of innocents, though. Whenever they assault a Republic installation, they let the civilian workers leave in peace. But through their propaganda, the Republic government and army depict the Resistance Movement as terrorists, threatening the peace of the country. According to government officials, the rebels do not hesitate to kill anyone standing in their way. The destruction of a large and economically important civilian workshop by a group of Resistance members serves as an example for their arguments. This incident cost 15 civilian workers their lives, only because the rebels thought they were building new kinds of weapons for the Republic. This, in the end, proved to be true, justifying the attack. The general public does, however, not know of this and is thus condemning the Resistance's actions. Recently, the Resistance movement won an important victory in the quest for freedom. A small group of Resistance members managed to capture a vital trading outpost of the Republic. The outpost is located at an intersection of two major trade routes. Those in control of it have a significant monetary advantage as they can charge fees or confiscate the wares brought through the outpost. Responding to the loss of the outpost, the Republic has already devised a plan to retake and drive the rebels out of it. To prevent this from happening, the Resistance representative in Garrel City has ordered his operation within the ranks of the Republic Guard to steal the attack plan in order to develop a counter strategy.
And I will say that was way too long.
That sounds more of like an intro seat than an actual synopsis.
Yeah, that doesn't really tell much about the story. Like, there's a lot of redundant details.
It doesn't mention the main characters or what they're going to be doing throughout the game. It's more of an introduction to the premise than an actual story. I can't help but think that the Republic Guard aren't really that bad. They don't threaten the innocents, and they leave the civilian workers in peace. If they're really all so bad, why is there resistance moving at all?
No, he's not talking about the Republic. This is his problem with his syntax and his all this. He's talking about the Rebellion.
Oh, so what does the Republic do that's so evil?
Evil Empire, usually Evil Empire.
So we just understand that because they're the government, they're the bad guys. Without really needing any reason for it.
Yeah, it's basically, for more than 2 years, blah, 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 the Resistance Movement have fought against the Republic Guard in their endeavor to overthrow, blah, blah, blah. They, meaning the Resistance Movement, are attacking military facilities as well as supplying the Republic troops with food and clothing.
Oh, okay. I still don't see why the government is so evil, just because they're saying it is.
Yeah, so basically they need to describe more about the overall arcing story and mention the main characters. They need to...
Yeah, tell us about the game that we're going to be playing, not the backstory.
Yeah. We don't need to know about what has happened. You can describe that in the game. We need to know about who your main characters are, who the antagonist is, or at least who your front antagonist is. I mean, if you want to have twists and turns, it's perfectly fine. But you also need to you need to explain why the heroes are doing what they do, and you need to explain why the villains are doing what they do, and why they are villains.
Yeah,
you
basically, give us a reason to play the game. What is the game I'm going to be playing, not what is the game, what happened before that, you know?
Yeah.
Tell me what I want to know that's going to make me want to play the game.
I will say this, though. I'm actually really impressed with how he laid out the world with all the, like, the whole economy and everything. That's a plus. I'd say that.
No,
I like that a lot.
He said the Republic of Eshteri is in disarray, and that's pretty much it, right?
No, like, he has all these cities planned out and everything. He has specifics, and it's a plus for me.
What do you mean where he has cities planned
what
out?
Cities?
What, like,
Garrel's... Are you talking about the story description, or have you jumped to screenshot?
No, I'm doing story description. Like, it just seems very informative, and not for the synopsis, but in general, it seems very informative.
No, yeah, this is really well planned out stuff, but it's kind of misleading and it's heavy for the player to read in a summary.
Yeah, as a synopsis, it doesn't fulfill its goal at all. But other than that, it is really in-depth, and I mean, I do like that as a plus.
I see what your point is, and I agree that these details are good to have planned out, but this is stuff that should be explained in-game and not in a story synopsis. Like, this is stuff basically going, and this is the intro to the game. It's not, this is what the game's going to be about, which is what they should be talking about, is what the overarching story is going to be. And let's move on to characters.
I just can't get over that. Bad guys don't really seem all that bad.
No, I
like,
agree.
It's just typical. They're the government, so they must be evil. The resistance must be good. Like, maybe the resistance are the bad guys. Like, you know, they're going against the government.
This is true.
I'd like to see a game where, you know, it turns that around and you actually, you know, the government are actually the good guys for once.
Yeah, that would be an interesting way to do, and they might be able to take your idea. But as true to his form, with the bad guys are bad, go with it, his characters, which we won't go in depth. And to save time on the podcast, we decided to read through the character section only beforehand. And a lot of these characters seem very generic, cliche, by the RPG book. Their names are very just plain and commonplace. One character, his last name's Sermon, and he's a cleric. One character is a paper cutout of Faye Valentine on surface level from Cowboy Bebop. I mean, check
one
out the
character
topic.
Is your typical Arab.
Yes,
you have an Arab, and then you have a Chinese character, and it's just you're pretty much taking a character to fill every RPG staple, and just, you know, okay, I have one of these guys, one of these guys, one of these guys. You know, that's my hero party.
Yeah, one thing they should do to make this better is to go all over their characters again, find out what relevance they have to the story, give them an actual personality besides just this RPG archetype, because reading these descriptions just makes it go, oh, okay, there's this character from this game, there's this character from this game, there's this character from this game. The characters don't really stand on their own, so going over your characters and rewriting them and going over what their purpose is would be something they should definitely do with this.
Yeah, don't force your character an archetype, basically. Let your characters develop themselves.
Yeah. Go with a core idea and then build off of that. Like, this character's purpose is to be an obstacle, so why would they be an obstacle? It's because they want this.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Keelum, do you want to talk about screenshots?
Yes. I'm actually impressed by screenshots. They don't look that bad. I will say this. Don't have a different version of screenshots. Like, you have the older screenshot tab. Don't do that. Try to keep them all relevant and nice.
Or if you do, give us a reason. You know, say, you know, maybe, you know, the battle system has been changed or these maps are, you know, getting revamped. There's not really much of a reason. I can't tell if they're older because they're from an old version of the game or because he updated his thread since then and added a new screenshot at the top. I don't know how relevant the old ones are.
Also, the usual more gameplay. We have one screenshot of gameplay. It's not that bad, but put a lot more than just one.
Wait, which is the screenshot of gameplay? The one with the
weird... It's the battle strength. It's the second to last showing the base fight system. Another complaint I have about this screenshot...
That's confusing.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's really, really dark.
I have two complaints... Yeah, that's my complaint with this one and the next one, is they're too dark to see any details. Like, I can understand trying to be underground, but you have to be bright enough where you can see details and see what's going on. And the way they are now, it's difficult to see anything. The screenshot before that with the dialogue, that shows a good level of darkness. I'd still want it a bit brighter.
It's too blue.
But, there's too much blue, and it could be a little bit brighter. And I also dislike how the RTP face is cut off. They shrunk the message box to fit with the black border on the bottom. I appreciate trying to do letterbox, but make the bottom black border fit the message box. Don't shrink it down or remove the face set. And also, you'll want to align the name box to be aligned with the message box.
Yeah, and I really, really don't like that font. Like, for his name where it says Leon, it seems like it's a little too small. Padding is good. I like padding, but... The thing that kills it are the italics. I don't want to play an entire game where I have to read the same font. It's going to get really grating on my eyes after a while.
Yeah, definitely you don't want... Get rid of the italics. It makes it not pleasant to read.
And then there's the those windows in the base fight system screenshot.
Oh, yeah.
With the numbers and that P thing. And it's just... I'm not going to say they're confusing because I don't understand how the system works just yet. But I am going to say that they're not very pleasantly aligned.
Yeah. Then, like, the numbers should be centered in the windows.
They don't have to be centered. necessarily, but they have to. There should be something that makes it a little prettier or more readable, if that makes sense. I really don't like the way that the P is right up against the side there, while the other ones have some decent padding.
Yeah, and I also don't like how the numbers are right against the edge of the window as
well.
Yeah,
it seems a little strange. Like, the spacing and the sizing, it seems awkward.
Yeah, so definitely with these screenshots, the mapping is really well done. Unlike the previous game we were talking about, where everything was very condensed and cluttered, he's got really good spacing on his maps with the details. At least in the towns, there's clear pathways. The forest one seems like a story shot, so that's permissible. But for the rest of these, they look... You can tell where you're supposed to go, so that's really well done. Moving on, we're going to discuss the features. Compelling story with many twists and turns. As we've said on other player plays, you don't need to list that as a feature. That should be a given.
It's a mandatory requirement. Yes.
I would say that the next one is a feature, though.
Yes, influence the story with the decisions you make. That is a feature. You're saying you can make choices that affect the story. That's a feature. Multiple endings, depending on the decisions you make. Those two features should tie into one feature.
Yeah, that's the exact same thing.
Crafting system, that's a feature. Enhance your skills with crystals, that's also a feature. Quest log.
It's in the middle.
It's in the middle. I would just show a screenshot to show that you have a quest log and move it on from there. Get to know your comrades by solving character-specific quests.
I wouldn't call that a feature. I'd just say that's a way of them telling the story.
Yeah, that's character interaction, regular stuff.
Yeah, that's not really a feature. Interact with different factions. That also you could show through screenshots, like show a faction.
It's hard to understand exactly what he means by that.
Exactly. Like, that should be something you should show in screenshots. Build, expand, and protect your headquarters. Base fight system. That's a feature.
Yeah,
I mean,
it could be really cool.
This game seems a lot like somebody was like, I really like Suikoden, I want to make my own Suikoden. But it also... So, that's what the familiarity came with, is a lot of these characters and a lot of this story synopsis seems very by-the-book Suikoden 1. I don't know if either of you guys have played it, but...
I've played Legion Saga, which supposedly is almost a direct clone, and this game reminds me a lot of the Legion Saga games.
Yeah, so we can tell which game he's drawing his inspiration from heavily, but I think that if he polished the details and made it more his own, he could make this a bit better. He goes a bit into his base fight system, but as we discussed, it seems very similar to the Suikoden type stuff. Decision situation system is a fancy name for saying you can make choices.
Yeah, after that, I guess he just has a credits list. I would like to add really, really briefly that they're not necessarily necessary in a thread like this. I mean, you can put the credits at the end of your game or something like that. I don't think that they should... You really need a credit list at the end of every, you know, game thread.
Yeah, I think removing the credits might be a good idea. And it gives a person an incentive to beat your game and show the credits for stuff. I mean,
all right, so what do we think? Is this going to be a play or a flay?
Kill him, you go first.
I'm in the middle, but I'm leaning towards a play, actually, judging just by the thread itself. It has good screenshots. I would add a few more screenshots to the battle system and clean it up a little bit, especially the font. But other than that, yeah, I'd actually probably play this.
Yeah. In my opinion, I'm also really on the fence about whether this is a play or flay. The screenshots are really selling me, despite the fact that they can be improved a bit. But the characters and the story, which is really kind of crucial, and for my particular reason to play games, need a lot of work. But for the sake of this is an RPG Maker game, and there is still, and this is, he's got a demo, which I haven't played, but I might try it out. So I'm on the border, but I'm with Killam. I will lean towards a play.
I would say that this is not a play. For me, at least, because it just seems so generic. It seems like one of the games where I could play 100 RPG Maker games, and this I wouldn't really remember this one at the end of it. But at the same time, I don't think it should be a flay, because it looks like it's on the higher end of those games. So, I mean, I guess I should make a decision, but instead of saying it's a flay, I'm just going to say it's not quite a play.
Yeah, so I think we're unanimous across the board that this is on the border. This is a rare case where it's in the middle of, if it had just a bit more polish and it wasn't that generic, it would be a play, but it's also polished enough where it's not absolutely a flay. But for the sake of argument, A play just means that we would actually try out the demo and we would try playing this game. And a flay means we would put this back on the shelf and tell him to try better next time. So with that in mind, what would you say, Despain?
I would say, personally, it's a flay.
Deceit, The Vine Chronicles. This is a play. 2 out of 3. You guys in the RPG Maker web community, if you want to check it out, it's on rpgmakerweb.com in the forums under project development. It's called The Vine Chronicles. He's got a demo, so if you don't agree with us or you want to give your own opinion, go ahead and let us know and try out the demo for yourself. Check out the topic, and that's it for today's Play and Flay. Let's move on to the next order of business, which is our topic at hand. We're going to start a two-part series of this called Getting Serious. And part one, we're going to go over teams, such as teams versus solo games and how teams are structured. So to start off a bit, we're going to start with the nice little debate of teams versus solo. Killam has a team where he puts his game together, and I myself am making my game completely by myself. I've got a few help from people, but the primary amount of it is made by myself. So what constitutes a team to you guys?
Well, let me define what a team is for me. It's a group of people who share the core interest to finish a game. And the key word in that sentence is interest. You want your team members to care about your game and to be interested in it. That's what a team is to me.
And what about you, Despain? Like, what's a team to you?
A team is a group of people who fail to complete an RPG Maker game.
Okay, and a team to me is basically people who are on board together to work together to finish a game. Like, if everyone agrees to get stuff done and you actually get work done, then you're a team. There's a lot of mechanics to teams. So let's talk about the pros and cons to working on a team or doing it solo. I'll start with the pros for solo and the cons, since I've got some experience doing that. One thing that sucks about doing solo is that you have to do everything essentially on your own. Like, you can get some help from the community. That's perfectly fine. But the actual act of getting everything done and putting it all together falls to you. And if you don't have people to help you make graphics, you've got to make those graphics yourself. If you don't have people to help you make music, you've got to do it yourself. All this stuff, you've got to make sure it gets done on your own. And it's kind of intimidating. But at the same time, one of the benefits of working solo is you can definitely depend on yourself, or at least I hope you can depend on yourself, to get stuff done. You know that you know realistically where your team, where your work is going to get done. You know what time frames you can meet. You know when you're going to be able to meet them. There's no lying, beating around the bush with that. So, Killam, tell us about the benefits and cons of working in a team.
All right. The con is you have to take criticism from your team. They're your team. They're working on your game. And in a sense, it's their game as well. So when they have an opinion, you have to incorporate it because, again, you want your team to care about it. So if you have a story that you want to do and you can't do it because your team doesn't want to do it, you can't do it. You have to bend to their will somewhat. Not all the way, but you have to consider their opinion just as much as you consider yours.
I disagree with the severity of your statement.
What do you mean?
I agree that you should take your teammates' opinions into consideration, but if you are the leader of the team or the – you're basically the guy putting the game together and you're directing your team around while also, of course, contributing your own to the mix. You have to – somebody has to make the executive decisions. A team does not mean it's a democracy.
It could be.
It could be, but in my opinion, a democracy doesn't really work out that well. Somebody's got to make the decision. Somebody's got to be able to make the cut. Somebody's got to say the yay or nay. I agree that you should take your teammates' opinions into consideration, but I don't think that you should – if they don't like it, you have to cut it out.
Well, again, there's a lot of variables. There's the actual team leader and there's a team itself. But in general, I would say that you should consider their opinions more than – normal, because again, you want them to care about your game, and that's just how I work.
That reminds me of what I was going to say for pros for working on a solo is full creative control. You don't really have to listen to other people's opinion. I mean, obviously there's the idea of getting feedback on what you have so far and that kind of thing, but you have a specific vision and you can really stick to it if you're working on a game by yourself.
Yeah, yes. But pros for the team are kind of obvious. I want a tree done. Hey, Despain, you want to make a tree? And I don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of working on a team is you can spread the workload around.
Yeah, exactly. You're not when you have to do something, you're not, oh my god, you just say, all right, can you take care of this, and you can work on something else. It's not like like when I used to work solo for my stupid fan game, whatever, like 2 years ago, and I would always get unmotivated because I couldn't do something, but you don't have that with teams.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, well, no, you have demotivation with teams.
No, I mean, but it's not personal. Like, when you work on your game, you come across a hurdle, like, you have to get help.
A tremendous amount of time when you work with teams is spent waiting for people to do things, and then very often they just don't. And from my experience, teams fall apart pretty quickly.
Yeah. In one of the benefits of solo that I was reminded of was, you know, it's the same thing where the creative control and all that, but in the middle parts of it was you have to keep in mind what needs to be done, and a way to not get demotivated working solo is to keep a list of what needs to be done and just tackle it in different parts. If you get bored with one task, you can instantly jump to another task and keep the game fresh. Whereas if you're working on a team and you have one direct role and you don't really have other places where you can help, you may get tired working on this one thing. To summarize, one of the benefits of working solo is being able to jump from task to task and keep your game constantly fresh. Like, if I get bored doing pixel art, I can jump working on dialogue, or I can start balancing gameplay and all this stuff.
And I just want to add one tangent for the whole team thing. You don't have a team because you want a team. You don't need a team. It's not a mandatory requirement. If you need a team, and if you want to work with one, then you get one. You don't get a team because you want a team. And I've seen so many topics on the RPG Maker web where it's like, can you join my team? And it's just like, why?
Yeah, no, that's one thing I've noticed.
I would also like to add that there's not always anything wrong with that. A lot of people will approach RPG Maker as strictly a hobby. Their goal may be just to have fun working with a group of people on a project together. They may not have the end goal of completing some huge game or making money off of it. They might just want to have a team of friends who can, you know, have a shared hobby. And if you're going to approach it that way, there's nothing wrong with it, but you have to ensure that everybody else on the team has the same goal.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's more of what I think Killam's point is you don't need to have a team for the sake of having a team.
Exactly.
Yeah,
like, that's the better way to word it.
Yeah, if your goal is to have a hobby project and you want to work with a group of people, make that completely apparent from the get-go. You're like, hey, I want to work with a group of people to make a game. I want to have fun with this. I'll do this. Can some people help me out with this? But at the same time, if you're just sitting there going, well, if I'm going to make a game, I need to have a team because I can't do anything. No. And that brings me to one rant of my own is when you're working with teams, being an idea man is not a team position unless you have money. But basically, when in an RPG Maker group where everybody's working together trying to make it free, if you're just sitting there going, well, I have this game and I have this idea and you guys should all do this work so I can put it together.
Make my game for me.
Yeah. Nobody is going to make your game for you. If you want to make a game, you have to be able to contribute to it more than just, I wrote these characters in this story. Not to knock on writing. I like to write myself, and making good characters and good story does take a lot of effort. This is true. But if you just want to write good characters and a good story, write a book. If you want to make a game, you need to develop a skill that is integral to games development itself, such as in the respect of RPG Maker, you need to either know how to event, how to make maps, how to make art, how to make music, how to script. You have to be able to do one, if not more, of those things. Otherwise, you're not really going to be able to contribute much to the team. If you're just sitting there going, I'm going to make a team, let me ask for every single one of those things I just listed and only sit there and go, I'm going to tell everyone what to do, you're going to have a bad time.
So, Killam, do you want to talk about structure of teams and how a team should be led?
Right. I'm going to go back to a previous point I said. A team is a group of people with a common interest, and your goal as the team leader or whatever you want to call yourself is to make that interest known. You have to motivate your team constantly so they want to work on your game. And everyone's different, both the team leaders and the team members themselves. They both have different desires and they have different motivations. For example, the Spain is motivated only by money and nothing else. And another person on my team isn't motivated by anything, so I have to work with different people. You definitely need people skills. You need very, 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 very honed people skills to actually get something done.
Money is definitely a huge motivator. I mean, I've worked on teams for work on game projects, and good cohesion between the team is integral. Like, if nobody likes you or you don't like anybody, you're not going to get as much work done. And you all have to be able to sit there, put your differences aside, and go, let's get this job done. Let's get this game done. And with some games that, even if you think it's terrible, a paycheck will help. If you're doing any type of game thing for free, you have to absolutely be in love with that game idea and you want to see it succeed. Otherwise, you're not going to be motivated enough to see it through.
Not everybody is going to be a team leader. By the very nature of this setup, there are going to be more people who are contributing than actually in charge. So, Killam, would you like to talk a little bit about the experience of what somebody should expect, what somebody should aim for as being a member of a team and not necessarily the leader of that team?
A member of a team, you are part of something bigger. You have to put work into it, obviously. It's a requirement, and or you're not going to be on the team. So people are expecting things from you, so you have to do it. It's simple.
Well, I agree in some respects. I mean, if from a member point of view of a team, you also have less of a weight on your shoulders. If you're the leader, you have to make sure everything gets done and it's your baby, quote unquote. But if you're a member of the team,
it should still be your baby. You should still consider the game yours. I don't want people to think that, you know, there's grunts and then there's the guys telling them what to do. When you're working on a team, you actually have to think about it as a team that come together.
No, I agree. I'm just saying that if you're working on a project or you're helping out somebody on a project, you don't have to worry so much about the finer details of getting everything done. I mean, it's good to keep everything in consideration, but if you're just jumping on there and you're all, you know, hey, I'm going to make this, you can focus on your task. It's motivational to see everybody else working as hard as you do, but you don't feel as pressured as a member to get stuff done. I mean, you want to see the game succeed, but you don't have to. You don't have as much pressure on your head.
And when you have a team, you have to be very professional about it. And one point I wanted to address is that your team members don't have to be your friends. And if they are, you better make sure that you and your friends are very professional about it. Despain is one of my closest friends. I am very disgusted about it, but he is, and there's nothing I can do. And he's also on my team. But we work professionally, so it works out. We're both professional about it, at least.
Yeah, I agree. Professionalism is key to a team environment.
That doesn't mean you can't have fun together. That doesn't mean you can't joke around. All it means is that you have to have the same end game in mind and work towards that when you're putting in the time on the game itself.
Exactly.
Yeah. If, as far as professionalism goes, you have to not let things... You have to have a thick skin. You can't let stuff get to you. You have to keep the idea of getting this game done as your primary goal. Even if you're not friends with somebody and you don't really get along with them that well, you have to take those differences and put them aside. You have to sit there and go, you know what? Let's get this done.
Having thick skin is not thick to the point of I don't care about criticism. You have to have a very fine middle line. You want to take criticism, and you also want to ignore it, because some people just hate RPGs in general, and you have to deal with them too. And others just –
you definitely want to listen to criticism, but at the same time, you want to be able to define what is – criticism that is beneficial and what is criticism that is just not criticism, it's just insults. So,
I hate RPGs is not a criticism.
No, but if somebody says, oh, I personally don't find this particular feature fun, you sit there and you go, okay, well, let me think about that. Is this feature that they're disagreeing with, is it integral to my gameplay? Is it something I threw in just because it sounded cool? Or is it a feature that I think will really flesh out the game? At that point, as a leader, quote unquote, you have to make that gut decision about whether you think this feature will be better for the game and whether this person who doesn't like it has to just bite the bullet and deal with it, or whether they have a valid point and that this feature isn't really as good as you think it was and you should cut it out.
Team members will obviously be stronger than you in some areas and weaker in others. For example, Despain, it heavily influenced my story. Actually, he improved on it because he's very good with story and characters, and I'm not as good as him, obviously, so I actually took his advice more than I should have, or that the normal people do.
I want to make a side rant about teams, and this is something I've seen in the RPG Maker community with an alarming frequency, and that is people coming up with team names.
Here we go.
Yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to mention it. People coming up with team names and insisting on calling it a studio or studios. It's a personal pet peeve of mine to do that because it seems very, let's push this up and just slap a name on it to make it sound good. If you're a studio, it means you own a studio. If you're studios, it means you own multiple studios. Universal Studios has multiple studios. That's why they're called Universal Studios. Lots of other places that are called a studio. It's they have a physical location where you work together and the team works together. So just calling it a studio just to make it sound more important than it is really gives a wrong impression with trying to recruit people that are a bit more well-versed with stuff. Most people aren't going to care about that minor detail, but it's just a personal pet peeve of mine. So I plead with most of you to not do it.
Well, a studio could be your own house. You could maybe stretch it to that, but studios never works. I hate that the most.
Yeah, unless you've got multiple locations where you've got multiple teams working stuff, don't ever call it studios.
If you've
got a group of your friends or people to meet up at one location and work together, then yeah, you can be, this is this studio. We've got a studio here. It's in my basement, but it's a studio. You know, go to hell. So that's perfectly fine. But it's just, don't slap a name on there just to make it sound cool. It's really unprofessional and knocks you down a bit of a notch. It's like missing a colon. I just think less of you as a human being when you do it.
Are we going to that joke every episode?
That mention of studios, I want to mention a little bit about people who put so much emphasis on their group, people who put so much emphasis on their team and the name, and they actually end up losing sight of their game that they're working on. You see a lot of groups who set up a nice website, and they set up their own forums even, and they really go all out on that, and then at the end of the day, they never finish anything. So it's like the whole purpose of their studio was just to be able to call it that, you know, without actually producing anything. And I would say that it's very important to remember when you are working on a group like this, you have to focus on your project at hand. You can worry about your website, you can worry about, you know, getting your name out there after you've actually put something out there.
I agree completely. Forming a team to get the game together is perfectly fine, but you should not be doing a bunch of promotional material until you've got something playable. Like, once you've got an alpha down, then start going like, oh, we've got our website, we've got this, I've got some screenshots. Don't just make a team and start advertising it just to get attention on the internet. I know a lot of you are going to do it, but please don't. It's bad form. Wait until you've got something playable and something like a demo or something before you start showing off and doing a lot of promotional stuff. Make sure you've got the finish line in sight before you start throwing around the fanfare, you know?
I just don't do it until I have the finished game. I don't even wait for alpha.
Well, you know, preferably a beta would be the earliest you would go for, depending on certain factors. I mean, having a forum topic to show about your game and get feedback, that's perfectly fine. But as far as making a website, Facebook groups, Twitter groups and stuff to promote your game, wait until you've actually got enough of your game to show off. And by enough to show off, I mean you actually have gameplay done. Because if you just have a few screenshots that you slap together in RPG Maker, you still look pretty
yeah,
bad.
That goes exactly back to the idea of people who make a group just because they want a group.
Yeah, it's bad form. Please don't do it. And let's move on to solo structure. Despain, tell us a bit about that.
All right, I have a lot of experience playing with myself.
Me too!
I have experience working with teams, small teams where it's just me and one or two other people, and they always tend to fall apart because we don't have the same exact creative vision. So I've recently taken that, and I'm really pushing towards a really focused game on my own, where I have a specific end game in mind, and I you know, it's not just that I'm working completely on my own. I have a couple friends here and there that I'll ask for some help. Fomar is doing some scripts. Captain Jet has been helping me a lot, especially with his mouse script.
Oh yeah, Jet, it's a godsend.
Yeah, he's great. The game itself, I have a very specific idea in mind what I want to do, and I'm going to be doing pretty much all of it on my own. It really helps that I have experience with writing, and I have experience with graphical design, and I'm able to pool those together, so I have a fairly good amount of talent in those core areas that I can really focus on, which leads me into something. The first subsection I want to talk about here is, when you're working on a game on your own, it's important to be able to assign your own talents to different areas of that game. It's important to be able to recognize what you're good at and what you're bad at, and how and where you should manage your time in terms of your specific talents. Here's an example from my game. I have the ability to create enough custom graphics for an entire game, but the amount of time it would take is totally unreasonable. I could, you know, create, you know, 100 tile sets, but it would take a tremendous amount of time, and it would prevent me from actually working on the other elements of the game, like the story and the eventing and puzzle design and putting it all together. And I would just be, and this is exactly where projects in the past have failed for me. I get very ambitious with graphics because that's one of my specialties, but when it comes to actually putting the game together, I'm just totally burnt out because I've been working so much on the graphics and nothing ever comes together. So,
well, one thing you could do to combat that, as I was talking earlier with the solo thing, is you can jump to different tasks. If you get burned out on graphics, you can jump and work on another thing. But I also believe that a lot of people, team or solo regardless, get really hung up on graphics for their game when that should be the last thing you're considering. I mean, have a vision in mind, but you don't really need to worry about having final graphics in until you're in the beta stage, till you've got all your gameplay polished, and then you're just polishing all the details. You're done trying to create the game, and you're now just trying to get it working. Then you can go, let me slap in all these graphics. Because an idea that sounds really good, and this happened with me on my game, is I was all, you know, hey, I'm going to draw these cool little pictures for my intro, and I ended up going, wait, now I'm going to change the intro. All this time I spent on this art is totally useless. One thing that you're talking about with talent that I wanted to interrupt with a little bit was, talent is nothing but a boost. You don't need a talent to get stuff done. Don't feel that you have to have a team just because you're not good at certain aspects of making a game. Keep in mind what you are good at, of course. But if you're not good at something, try and get better at it. It'll take a lot of time. But if you're looking for someone, don't sit there idle. Actually take the time to try and improve that skill so you can, you know, if you end up not finding anybody, you actually get it done yourself and you're better off for it.
That leads me to the next segment, which is about not just managing your talent, but managing your time. And historically for me, I've had a very difficult time in the past completing games because I would think so much about the big picture. I think about the end game. But when you break it down and set small goals for yourself, things become a lot more reasonable. Like I mentioned before, I would try to make all the graphics, and then I would, you know, I would be thinking too much about the big picture. But with my recent project, I'm setting much smaller goals, like event this system, get this out of the way, and then I know it's there for the rest of the game. Or, you know, spend a day outlining the story and then call that good before you move on to other things. And when you set small goals, they're much more reachable, and as you finish each one, you get closer and closer into the end without even knowing how close you are sometimes. So when you're working alone, and when you're working with teams, I guess, it's important to be able to manage that time. But it's more important when you're working alone because you have to do so much and so many different things with your own ability.
Yeah, I agree. You don't have a lot of time to waste. Definitely keeping a list of what your current goals and what your next goals are. Like, for my next demo, I've got a list of the key features I have to get done. Like, I got to get this art done. I have to redo this thing. I have to polish this. So every time I finish it, I feel a bit of a good feeling when I cross something off the list and I'm just that one step closer. So it helps manage your time, and it also works great as a motivational device.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Whenever I get, like, stuck on my game, I don't know what to work on, I take some time off. I write down what I want to get done, and then I just check everything off, and it's a great way to get motivated.
So the last thing I want to talk about is knowing your own boundaries. This touches in on a little bit on what Reynard was saying about where to recognize what talents you're good at and what you're bad at. But it's more than just your talent. It's about when to ask for help in terms of motivation too, or when you have a question, you know, for criticism, you might show a screenshot in an IRC channel and say, hey guys, what do you think about this? I personally do that a lot. I don't have a thread for my game, but I'll ask people in IRC all the time. It's better for me because they can really help you along as you go, and it really keeps you focused. It's important to be able to say, I might not be right about this, or I'm not feeling 100%. There's nothing wrong with asking for help when you need to.
Yeah, I agree completely. I like to use both the RPG Maker Web forums, my own group of friends, and the IRC as well. If I don't know something or I'm unsure about something, I like to get an opinion. I like to have somebody sit in and go, hey, check out this part of the game. Tell me what you think. Or, you know, hey, which I have two ideas on how to approach this. Which do you guys think would be better? It's never a bad idea to look for feedback, because ultimately it's up to you which advice you follow, but it's always good to get opinions, because no man or woman is their own one person army. You have to be able to, you know when to ask for help. Basically, don't be afraid to get outside help.
Yeah, well, even when you're working alone, you're not completely alone.
Well, on the other side of that, you have to know when to not ask for help, and you have to know when to try things on your own. Like, I don't know how to invent this. Like, you didn't try anything at all. You have to know when to ask, when to not ask, and do it yourself.
This is true. This is true. You definitely want to try and approach it as much as you can, but if you're at a loss, there's no problem asking for help, but at the same time,
yeah, try it first, and then if it doesn't work out, see what people have to say.
Just don't be annoying, basically.
All right, so I think that's all I have to – I mean, I could talk about this in more depth maybe at another time, but I think that's a pretty good amount to talk about in terms of working solo versus working as a team for now. Do you guys have anything else to say before we go into our final thoughts?
No, I think we've pretty much covered the subject fairly well.
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, so what are our final thoughts?
Well, for me, again, there are different developers, there are different members. You need to find out what kind you are. Don't have a team for the sake of having a team. Figure out what you want to do, what you want to make, and then if a team requires it, go for a team.
Yeah, I agree with that. My final thoughts are I know that the internet is a wide resource. I personally prefer only to work with team with people I either really trust and who have proven themselves to get stuff done in a sizable time frame, or preferably people I know in person to work with because, you know, I can actually go to them and say, hey, get stuff done. I can threaten them with bodily harm. It's a great motivator. if you don't have money, punch people. But aside from that, what, like Killam said, don't have a team for the sake of having a team. If you can get it done by yourself, don't sit there and be idle. Get stuff done. Try and push yourself beyond your current boundaries. Try and improve yourself as a developer. Try and get more talents, because the more talented you are, the more viable you are to work on your own team, the more viable you are to work on other people's teams, and it just helps you develop more. But this is from a professional standpoint. If you're doing it as a hobby, just have fun.
All right, my final thought would be, however you approach this, whether you're on your own or with a team, or maybe you're on your own and you're just hiring a couple people to help you out, don't lose sight of what you're trying to do. If you're on a team, don't waste your time on, you know, the website and structuring and advertising. What really matters is the project that you're currently working on. But just don't lose sight of your end goals.
Remember, everybody, we're here to make games, not popularity contests.
All right. So is that it for our final thoughts, guys?
Life is a popularity contest.
All right. I also want to add that we did say that this was part one. We are definitely going to be going deeper into the subject of working on teams and getting serious about structuring your game. I'm not going to say that it's going to come out with the next episode, because we do have a special guest host planned for when we get there. So keep an eye on that one coming up in the future, even though we're not exactly sure when exactly it will be.
It may be next episode, it may be the episode after that, it may be a month from now, maybe a couple of weeks. We don't know yet, but we will be continuing the subject, and, you know, viewers at home can watch them in whatever order they please. But
yes.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. I also want to add that we are going to be having yet another new segment on the show. And Rainer, do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Yes. We're going to be talking about a great little thing where we can get some input from you guys, people listening to us and wherever you're located. We're going to do a Q&A segment where we're going to present a question that we would love to hear your opinion on. And, of course, we'll try and keep it related to the topic we talk about in that episode. So without further ado, this week's question is going to be, what experiences have you had while working in a team, either positive or negative? And if you haven't worked in a team, why not? Why are you opposed to working in a team, or just have you not had the opportunity? So go ahead and let us know either on the RPGMakerWeb.com forums in our podcast topic, or let us know on the Final Boss Blues website on the post with the podcast. Let us know, and we'll go ahead and discuss that in the next episode, what type of feedback we got from you guys.
You can also talk to us on Twitter. I'm going to start trying to be a little more active there, a little more interactive there. So you can reach us on twitter.com, Final Boss Blues is the name. So if you have any answers to those questions, we'd love to hear them there as well. I also have a little interesting piece of news. This could be exciting. Our podcast has recently been accepted to iTunes. So I'm going to have that link up on the website and on the forums, so you can stream this in your iTunes player or however that works for you.
Yes. But in any case, Final Boss Blues podcast available on iTunes. Enjoy that.
Pick it up today.
Pick it up, download it.
Right after you go to the store and buy Metroid Prime.
Let us all say our farewells. I'm Raynard Frost, signing off.
And I am Keelum.
And I am Dispain. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.